the regional vision that we came up with at the end of this, that was something that, again, resonated throughout the entire region, is that by 2055, educated people with good jobs living in a great place is what we want this region to be known for. That's the big vision. And so everything that we do somehow complements that and builds on that and seeks to achieve that.
Welcome back to the Camphouse Podcast. Today is the second half of our interview with Bridget Massengill, the Executive Director of Thrive 2055. In our first episode, we talked about the purpose of Thrive, of bringing together a million people across 16 different counties in three states to come up with a common community vision for this economic region and how we can work together for the prosperity of all. So today we're going to continue that conversation and look specifically at the four initiatives of Thrive, including economic development, education, transportation, and our natural resources. This is the Camphouse Podcast, and I am your host, Matt Busby. All right, so now we've talked a lot about the story and the overall vision about the way these four initiatives kind of are interlinked and interconnected. But now I really want to break that down and talk about each one of these initiatives on an individual level and kind of what are some of the ideas for how we can grow or protect these initiatives within the 16-county region. What's the common vision that we're coming to when it comes to these four things? And so the first one is the economy and jobs, right? It's economic development.
And I do want to answer your something you just said, which was the common vision. And I want to make sure that I point that out. The regional vision that we came up with at the end of this, that was something that, again, resonated throughout the entire region, is that by 2055, educated people with good jobs living in a great place is what we want this region to be known for.
That's the big vision.
That's the big vision. And so everything that we do somehow complements that and builds on that and seeks to achieve that. And so to break it down, yeah, again, with anything broad and general, we'd love to have the 30,000 foot view, but we've got to zoom in and figure out how do you make that happen? So then the question is, how do we even begin to implement that greater vision? And the first we can talk about is the Regional Economic Development Initiative.
Actually, Bridget, let me stop you, because on your website, which I do want to point this out, for anybody wanting to learn more, you can go to thrive2055.com. But within that, you guys have something called the Regional Compass. And I think it might actually be easier for us to talk about this by mentioning the Regional Compass first. So it's actually a whole separate website called theregionalcompass.com that talks about each one of these initiatives: economic development, education and training, regional transportation, and natural treasures. And there's a fantastic video associated with each one of these initiatives that you can go online and watch to kind of get an idea about what we're talking about here. So thinking about the regional compass, you know, talk to me a little bit more about the economic development piece of that.
The economic development piece comes down to the discussion of understanding very clearly that we want to be a region that stops competing with each other and starts competing with the world. And that plays out in many, many different ways. But it starts with, I like to break this out into two different areas. So there is an effort from all of the key economic developers in the region. So these are the professionals that are working directly with site selectors, and they're the professionals that work directly with the major industries that came into this region recently and caused the game changing. And then all of the outlying new companies that continue to come in, whether directly related to the auto manufacturing industry or anything else. So the economic development professionals through Thrive 2055 came together and started to say, it might be a good idea if we start marketing this region when we do make our global trips, when we are talking to companies across the globe about wanting to locate here. Because at the end of the day, and we use this analogy a lot, if you're in a fishing boat So just stick with me on this. If you're out on the lake and you're out fishing and you're with a group of people in that boat and you are all kind of championing for each other because you want somebody on that boat to land the fish. And when they do, it's their individual win, but you're all celebrating together. The last thing that you want is for that fish to get out of the boat and go swim off and go to somewhere else. And so the reality of economic development from a regional scale is that every community is most certainly going to want to go towards the jobs that make the most sense for their culture, for their community. But at the end of the day, we want them here versus somewhere out west or in another country. So that is the effort that's now underway to bring those key economic developers together so that they can create strong messaging and a strong marketing tool and resources and different materials and then come up with strategies to help shape future opportunities in a way that will make our story that much more compelling.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you say these economic developers, I mean, I think if you live in Chattanooga, which is the vast majority of the people who listen to this podcast, you know, obviously we can think of Volkswagen and Amazon, but who else within the 16 county region is having this conversation? Who are those other economic players that we're not thinking of just because, you know, we live in the city, so...
Well, sure. I mean, when you think of the industries, I mean, think about Wacker, which is the largest, it's actually the largest development in the state of Tennessee that was being developed up in Bradley County. And then when you go down to Dalton, Georgia, you know, their entire market was based around the carpet industry. And so Shaw Industries is one that has been so active at the table with us. And the fact that for them, for example, they have sites that are located in, I believe it's 9 of our 16 counties. They have a facility across this entire region and in all 3 states. Why does this matter to them? The workforce, and then also the transportation and the infrastructure. And all of those types of things. So there's so many other industries that are out there. And we've talked about Google coming into Jackson County. Yesterday or earlier this week, we had the announcement that the Bellefont nuclear plant in Jackson County, which was just all in all defunct. They weren't sure what was going to happen to it. It was just purchased for $111 million with a plan to develop $17 billion, I believe it is.
Wow.
Starting in 2017, those are big game changers. So the two components of economic development that we like to look at is you have the large industrial recruitment, and then you have the smaller, which is, we all know small business makes up the majority of our country's economy. And so what we're doing are things such as we have a Thriving Communities Initiative that's underway. And what that does is it helps work with local communities around this region to come up with strategies to enhance their economic vitality. And in the first challenge, it was all focused around by leveraging their community's arts and culture. And so we are actively getting out there and working with communities to see what can they do to enhance their economy through arts and culture, through the attraction of the creative class, through the attraction of innovative jobs. What can we do to leverage this incredible movement that Chattanooga has right now with the Innovation District? What can we do to leverage that across the entire region in communities that we see? We have 79 communities in this region. And so it's working with them to shape those strategies with the idea that these large manufacturing facilities are huge game changers, and the things like thriving communities and the economic vitality of the towns is always going to be rooted in their identity and their people and in their unique assets that nobody else but them have. And so we're working very heavily on that focused economic strategy for the region.
Yeah, again, if you go on their website, thrive2055.com, not only can you find this regional compass that's kind of guiding our discussion now, but also the Thriving Communities section that Bridget just mentioned. Is this? You click on it, it actually takes you to this a presentation that you scroll through that is interspersed with videos and gorgeous images of the region. And it really tells the story of what is unique about each one of these counties within our 16-county region, and it's beautiful. So, okay, so go back to the regional compass. We talked about the economic development piece. The next one you guys have there, we're just going to go on order on these, is education and training. And again, all of these are interconnected. We kind of already touched on how they're interconnected. I'm not necessarily asking why is this important anymore, mm-hmm. but how do we up our game when it comes to education and training across the region in order to push forward that economic development that we just talked about?
We have 12 higher ed institutions, accredited higher ed institutions in our 16-county region. And before Thrive, there had never been a reason for those institutions to come to the table and start talking about the challenges that they were facing. And so they have done that, and they are doing that. And something that came up in these conversations was all about making sure that our region's people can access the higher ed outlets that they have, can navigate into them, through them, and then out of them. And so when you're thinking about a county like Dade County, for example, we would hear that the two places that a Dade County, Georgia resident may go for higher education would either be down in Northeast Alabama Community College or up to Cleveland State, for example. So you have a Georgia State resident who is going to an Alabama college and then possibly transferring to a Tennessee college and trying to navigate that. There was no structure in place for anyone to really look at how to do that. So as we advance our vision and say, at the end of the day, we want this region to be educated. We want them to have access to good jobs. What are some simple things that we can do? I say simple. What are some things we can do to start moving the needle on that? And so getting these institutions to talk now about ways that they can make that more of a seamless transition, ways that they can highlight the great programs that our region has that are already in place. And then working together has been a very key thing towards the higher ed collaborative that we have in place for this region.
Yeah, so it seems like, you know, after that year of listening and you guys hearing from people within the 16-county region, what's really important to them, jobs, and education to get those jobs, transportation, natural resources. What you guys then went and did is like, okay, this is the big issue. Who do we need to bring to the table to make this issue a reality for all 16 counties to be able to get them to sit in the same room, look each other in the eyes, and have a conversation? So far, I've heard you say this. You've done that for economic development. Who are the major employers within this entire region? Let's bring them together. Let's get them to talk. Now you guys have done that with higher education, bringing all these different institutions together over the table. And so it seems like a huge part of what you guys have done with Thrive is actually just putting people in the same room to have a conversation.
It is the secret sauce, and we know that, and it has been proven here in the Chattanooga community. You know, if it were not for the community conversations that occurred in the 1980s, we wouldn't be where we are. The community came together. The community drove it. And so what we've done, we often talked about, this is that type of community conversation on steroids, because we have been able to tackle that with all of these different areas with the idea that we are all sharing so many of the same things, but the conversations have never happened. So I go back to something I said much earlier on, was the purpose of Thrive is to convene the conversation to ignite action. So Thrive is not going to be the entity that gets out there and starts creating any kind of plan to help Northeast Alabama figure out how to work together with Cleveland State or Chattanooga State or whomever it may be, but convening that group and helping them to come up with ways that they might want to work together has been exactly what this has been all about.
Okay, well, staying on this education and training track, you know, there's another tab on your website called the High School of the Future. And so I'd hoping you can tell us a little bit more about that. You know, what are you guys looking to do? What are you trying to create with the High School of the Future?
So High School of the Future is a strategic partnership that we have with BrightSpark. And you can learn more about that also through our website. It's powered by Bridge Innovate here in Chattanooga. And they have been working with high schools and middle schools on different challenges facing the schools and looking at ways to get students engaged in community efforts. after they had learned about Thrive and worked with us in thriving communities, they reached out to us with this High School of the Future and said, is this something that we may want to work with you guys on and open up to the entire region? So we opened this up, and what it is about and why we loved it so much is because this is a challenge that asks students, the ones that are living and breathing and walking through that school every day, what do you envision the High School of the Future to look like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, hey, maybe even 5 years from now? Because we know that our world is changing, and we know that there is such potential in the lives of our students to figure out what we can do better. And so we have teams working with their teachers to come up with their solutions. So it is student driven, and it is all about helping them to begin to understand that we listen to their suggestions and their ideas, and we're working with high schools and middle schools from across the region on doing just that.
So the submissions for those just closed, right? Like, you guys have been working on this for a little bit. I guess what's the process at this point? When are is there a winner? How is this working?
It is a challenge that they're all going through together, all of these students. They're having a design competition, and so they will be presenting their final proposal, their final pitch, on March 29 at the Hunter Museum.
Okay, great.
The next challenge with that is helping to get the leadership who has the ability to listen and do something with it, to listen and do something with it.
Well, that's going to be an exciting next challenge too, obviously. I mean, 16 counties got at least 16 different superintendents, and but you guys have experience in bringing these people together. So that's going to be Thrive's next challenge. All right, so continuing with this regional compass, we talked about economic development, we've talked about education and training. The next big one is regional transportation. And I'm wondering if you guys could almost just rename this infrastructure, to be honest. Because that's the big issue, is the infrastructure of this region, of how do we link this entire region to benefit all of us.
And you know, something that we have said with this is we call it access to the assets. The entire idea behind it is just what you said. This isn't just transportation. This is about accessing the assets that we've talked about in all of these other initiatives in across this region. And so how do you access those? And we know without question that the future accessibility is going to be so heavily driven around fiber optics and digital connectivity. So that's a great example of how that transportation initiative is so much more than just our traditional ways of thinking that you transport yourself to that asset.
Yeah.
It can very easily be through fiber optics technology. So the regional transportation initiative, as it is called right now, has a couple of things that we're looking at. One is the fact that we have a tri-state challenge that faces our built infrastructure as it has to do with our roads. And GDOT and TDOT and ADOT are not all coordinating together to figure out how to make sure that our region's residents can get within and through this region seamlessly.
Yeah, especially when none of those dots are, you know, centered on this area at all, right? Like the centers of all of those transportation departments are often capitals that are very, very far from this region. So making this area a priority is never going to be high on their list.
No, and you know, so Thrive is out here to connect the dots.
That's great.
Truly. And so we have to get the conversations again at the table to start coordinating these things and to start thinking about these things, because when they're not, here's an example of what's coming at us. This is going to take a heightened priority in 2017, because what we know through this process is that the freight that travels through this region that is essential to our economy. Without freight, we don't have clothes on our backs or food on our table. That's just a reality of life. But our region has a high majority of freight, with 80% of it coming through, that doesn't start or stop here. So we're a thoroughfare. We're a crossroads. That's only going to get worse. Yeah. We know this because there is the Panama Canal south of us is getting widened to bring in these huge vessels that carry an enormous amount of cargo. And the cargo, instead of going and offloading in California from China, is now going to come all the way down and around and come through that enlarged Panama Canal and come right up to the now being enlarged Savannah port.
Wow.
The Savannah port is already the busiest container, single container port in the country, right over here in Savannah, Georgia. And it gets offloaded off of those vessels and it hits the interstate and it comes straight up through our region.
That's fascinating. I can say I've never thought about the connection of the Panama Canal to Chattanooga, but clearly that's incredible.
And the problem is, to use your example of the capital, so the capital of Georgia, Atlanta, and they are looking at this issue because they are investing in expanding that port, but they are also making multi-billion dollar investments in ensuring that that doesn't mess up the already messed up Atlanta traffic. One of those such infrastructure investments was made in Maury County. So in our region, Maury County has this soon-to-be-built Appalachian Regional Port. It's a great win for economic development because you as a company can know that you can deliver your freight straight over to that train and it'll hit straight to the Savannah port and you won't have to worry about on-time delivery. It'll hit straight to the port. However, think about that in the reverse. So now the freight stays, it avoids Atlanta, comes straight up to the Appalachian Regional Port, offloads, and comes straight through Chattanooga. So we have to figure out as a region what we're going to do to keep the things that we love about our region, to keep the innovations that we know that we have coming towards us in transportation, and figure out what we're going to do so that we do not end up in an incredible gridlock because we simply stuck our heads in the sand on this. That is the kind of thinking that Thrive can bring to the table, because nobody is thinking about what's happening down in Savannah Port and how it's going to affect us here in this region, or if it's going to affect our Tennessee roads, because Tennessee is dealing with their issues with infrastructure. So we're able to bring that conversation to the table.
So have you guys been able to connect the dots at this point yet?
We have connected the dots in the conversations that have happened and bringing them to the table, most certainly, but there is a lot more work to be done. The most effective way that we've connected the dots is through our MPOs. So our region has three different metropolitan planning organizations that are the ones charged with coming up with the long-range transportation plans that then get sent to their state to be put through the hopper for state funding. And so through this process, we've been able to bring Cleveland, Chattanooga-Hamilton County, and Dalton-Whitfield County's MPOs to the table to start talking about these things.
That's great. And so what are some of the ideas that are out there right now to help alleviate some of this traffic?
Let me tell you, one of the most incredible ways to tackle this is through encouraging things that are already out there, such as green trips. So if you haven't gone to the greentrips.org, I believe it's the website, that is run through the Chattanooga-Hamilton County RPA. And it is an effort for you as a commuter to look at different ways to commute in and out every day. And so whether it be biking, whether it be walking, or for somebody like me who can't bike or walk to work because that would take me about 2 days, it could be a telecommute. And when you put your green trip in through that system, it will tell you how many miles you've saved on your car. It'll tell you how many greenhouse gas emissions you have saved. It'll tell you how much money you've saved in putting gas in your car. And so at the end of the day, there's a motivation for you as a user to look at alternative options. And then as a region, it's helping to lessen congestion by looking at all of these multimodal forms of transportation that we can all do that is going to help alleviate congestion in our region.
Yeah. And just to update that website is greentripscha.org. greentripscha.org. Well, you know, I can remember, so I've been in Chattanooga 6 years now, and I remember at some point, I feel like it was 2 or 3 years ago, there was significant conversation about, you know, a northern and a southern bypass around Chattanooga. So is that, I guess, did that conversation come out of the Thrive conversations that have been happening over the last 3 years? And what's the status of that?
It's been a conversation, I believe, that's been ongoing for a long time, but it resurfaced again in Thrive because it was something that people across the region were saying could be one alternative that would require connecting the DOTs of the three states in order to come together and figure out how to do that. So it was pitched out as a potential strategy that we could, as a region, start to target. Here's the reality. So what we discovered first and foremost was that the general response that we got back from that was not favorable. It was not the highest ranked priority as to how the region should grow. We heard more and more that the overwhelming responses that we got were for the region's communities to invest in mass transit was one such option, in bike and pedestrian facilities, and looking at different ways for us to move throughout our communities within the region. The other reality is the fact that, to put it in perspective, the I-75-24 interchange that everybody in the region is familiar with is already on the books to be fixed. And the price tag on that is anywhere between $65 to $75 million. And that is just one interchange. So when you start to think about the financial feasibility of a bypass loop ever happening in my lifetime, my children's lifetime, or my grandchildren's lifetime, we need to start talking about something else, because by that time, we won't even have cars. We will have a completely different way of moving around this region.
And so you're saying a lot of this, when you're talking about, it was clear this wasn't a priority. Was this coming out of the community sessions you guys did, that kind of thing?
Yes, it was coming out of the community sessions, the input, and we did a very intense input session around these four initiatives to learn that they wanted to see us provide better options for transit, walking, and biking as the highest rated approach that the region should take towards transportation. And that came from across the entire region, not just in the urban cores.
Wow. Yeah, that's actually very interesting. Well, and I think, you know, I remember, like I said, when I heard about this bypass, the criticisms that I heard actually take us into the next piece of the regional compass, and that's our natural resources. So the criticisms I always heard of the bypass system is it wasn't feasible without destroying, without it getting so close to Cloudland Canyon that it would destroy that state park. And same thing with going north. You know, that northern bypass is going to cut through the Sequatchie Valley again, which is definitely one of our region's treasures. And so, you know, I think this is a real natural movement into this final piece about the regional compass, and that is the natural resources, the natural treasures of this area.
That is exactly why the financial feasibility, for those that only look at it from a financial standpoint, is just enormous, because of the beautiful geographic constraints our region has. And so to think of us as being a flat region that could easily just throw down a road around the region is just not feasible. The expense would be enormous. And then, yes, we heard so loud and clearly through this initiative the importance of preserving the very places in our outdoors that make us so unique and like nowhere else on the planet. We have the most incredible beauty that I often heard of it as the Garden of Eden. And when you would flip back the covers of the things that you see with your bare eye, you would find out that we have one of the highest volumes of biodiversity in anywhere in the country. We have a little river, the Conestoga River, that when you look on a map, it has more native species than the Colorado River.
Wow.
And it's just amazing, and it's mind-boggling to think that we have all of this natural beauty that is complemented by a biodiversity aspect that makes it scientifically special. So I think the time of this interview is very appropriate to really put this in perspective, because if you walk outside today, you can't breathe. And something that we said through and through this process was that nature knows no boundaries. It doesn't stop when it gets to one county line. It doesn't stop when it gets to the state line. And it is something that transcends all of that. And right now, when we think about the fires that we're facing here in this region, suddenly it does elevate the importance of ensuring that we protect our air quality, of ensuring that we protect the natural landscapes that surround us. And those are the kinds of things that we had heard through Thrive and the importance of us preserving critical open spaces that are not just critical to our outdoor recreation and to our desire to just see the beauty, but are also critical to the sustenance and actual life and well-being of our region.
Yeah. And I think, it goes... And this is where this natural treasure piece ties into the other pieces of the regional compass, is that, the other a very common theme I have on this podcast too, is that, the reason people move to Chattanooga is the quality of life. And so much of that comes down to the natural resources and the natural treasures. And so, we could have jobs, we could have plenty of education, get those jobs. But the true reason people want to stay here and people want to live here is not only can they have a great job, but they can live in a beautiful place. And so, it's such a priority. I love that when you guys did this, that the natural treasures were one of those major initiatives that the entire region, the entire community of the 16-county region identified as being crucial to us.
It's absolutely crucial. And it is something that cannot be taken for granted. And this could go back to the days of the late 1960s and 70s when Chattanooga was branded as the dirtiest city in America because there was no focus on this. And because the smoke that we see today was not caused by fires, but was caused by industry. And so now we don't want to turn the clock back and find ourselves in that position again. And we want to protect the things that make us so special. And thank goodness it isn't just one community that's saying this. It isn't just one entity that's saying this. This resonates across the entire 16-county region, and it resonates across all sectors. We early on, I'll never forget a conversation I heard very early on by someone who said, when it comes to economic development, we'll often tell folks, look over there. If you see that mountain, don't worry, a bulldozer can do anything. Because they hadn't been at the table and heard from the people of this region how they felt about that mountain.
Yeah.
And that same person doesn't say that anymore. Yeah. And that same person now understands that the reason that that person was even attracted to the region was because of that mountain. The question that we often hear is, well, how can you preserve farmland? How can you preserve it if it's not helping to build the economy? You preserve farmland by helping to make it profitable. Yep. It's that simple. And we are a region that is very, very rooted in buying local and local sourced foods. And the more that our restaurants and different places around the region can do that, the stronger it's going to help protect that very initiative and make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the economy is such a massive national debate right now, but I think I'll tell you, and Bridget will tell you, the greatest thing you can possibly do to help your economy, your local economy, is to support local things. And that includes farmers markets, that includes food co-ops with local farmers, especially buying meat products from local farmers and stuff like that. And it can be more expensive. It can also require a little bit more planning, but that's how we preserve that farmland.
That's correct. And another first that's come out of Thrive has been pulling together all of the different land trusts and conservation groups. And we are so thankful to UTC, their GIS department, Andy Carroll, Charlie Mix. Those two have been incredible leaders that are actually getting international attention, I'll tell you as well, of the work that they're doing. Our consultants that came in and worked with us were blown away by the capabilities that they have there. And so they're helping to lead an effort to bring these conservation groups and land trust groups together, because there were so many out there that were doing that in this region, but they weren't working together. And so once critical open spaces are identified, then they can start making their strategic plans in sync with one another to make sure that some of these places that are critical to our natural well-being are preserved and protected by the people that are already doing that.
You know, really quick, going back to the topic of transportation too, we're recording this interview on November 16th, and tonight there is actually a meeting about the identified high-speed rail between Atlanta and Chattanooga. Do you guys have anything to do with that conversation at all?
We're actually not a part of that or enabled that or brought that here or convened that, but we had heard so often about that strategy. You know, it's been talked about for years. And I think anything that we can do to encourage forms of transportation that keep us not looking at the traditional ways of moving is exactly what we need to start looking towards.
Yeah, and so that's happening today. So anybody listening to this episode, that meeting has already passed, but I'm sure we will have an episode on that high-speed rail line at some point in the next couple of months. I'd love to have them on the podcast to talk about that.
When we talk about transportation, you know, I've talked about how freight is hugely important to this region in the aspect that we need to be prepared for it, and we need to ensure that the freight that is actually delivering to our companies here in the region can get to our companies, but that freight that's just traveling through doesn't completely cripple our infrastructure. But on the other side, speaking of green trips and all of these other things, our strategy is going to be so much shaped around the action on how we're going to see this happen. It's going to be so much shaped around to the individual decisions that you and I can make every day. And that is something that will most certainly help us find ways to move around this region by simple choices. Can I take the back road? Of course you can. Can a semi truck? No, but I can. And is it going to make it a better commute? Absolutely. Can I bike to the meeting that's next door versus get in my car and drive? Yep, you sure can. These are choices that individually made will most certainly move the needle in a much better direction over the next several years. And if anything, it's going to help us not get too far ahead of ourselves on spending millions and millions of dollars on infrastructure that we're not going to need because of the technologies we know are coming at us with driverless technologies and autonomous vehicles and all of these things that people don't yet. Some people don't acknowledge it's going to happen. My question isn't if it's going to happen. My question is, when that comes to this region, are we going to be ready? How are we going to make sure that our rural communities don't get left behind because they don't have the fiber optic technology that's going to be required for these driverless cars?
Well, Bridget, you know, what's next for Thrive 2055?
The thing that we often hear is when there is a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of dollars that have been put into something, no one ever wants to see it sit on the shelf. This is one of those times that really the rubber's going to hit the road. This is when the things that we've discovered and learned about our region and the things that people are saying they want to see us preserve and the things that people say they want to see us work on cannot just sit on a shelf. And so we are transitioning into no longer viewed as a planning entity, but now as a active or action-oriented entity that's about partnering. It's a partnership. It's about keeping these conversations going. Because without that reason to keep the conversation going, it just won't happen. But the only way that this is going to work is if the region trusts our intentions, if they trust that we are listening to them, if they trust that we know that they have a love for every one of their individual communities, and we are going to work with them to make sure that they build their own strengths and not anybody else's but theirs, and that the region trusts our data and the trends that we are going to keep an eye on and get out there and educate, because we want to educate the region so they can advocate for themselves. And that's going to be a huge component of moving forward. And it's going to be something that's going to keep us from ending up a region that's left behind, left in gridlock, or we have not done what we have been heard, what we have heard from this region that we must do in order to become a place of educated people with good jobs, living in a great place.
All right, Bridget. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. I've truly enjoyed this.
so much to Bridget for stopping in and sharing about the vision of Thrive 2055 and this rather enormous project to bring together a million people spread across 3 states, 16 counties, and 79 communities. And it's just a real testament of how, when we work together, we can not only protect what we love about this place, but we can work together to bring prosperity to this place in a really unique and special way. So thank you to Bridget for being here and for all the work that Thrive is doing to pull together so many different people to make a better tomorrow for this entire area. Thank you to our studio sponsor, the Lamp Post Group. Please go online, learn more about them at lamppostgroup.com, and check out their podcast, Dynamo Discussions. And thank you guys for being here. You can share this episode or any one of our episodes at thecamphouse.com/podcast. And you can subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast from, whether that's on Google Play or Apple iTunes. Wherever you get them, you can subscribe to the Camphouse Podcast there. So thank you all for being here. I hope you have a great day, and we'll see you again here next week.